Welcome to The Hobcast, a weekly podcast from Hoback Books, an independent publisher of thrillers, crime, and suspense novels. Each week, we'll take you behind the scenes of what we do, the challenges and the triumphs, the bumps and troughs of building a new creative business in this pandemic world. We'll hear from the people who make all this possible, the authors, cover designers, and editors, and we'll have expert insights from our guest star interviews. Nothing is off the agenda on The Hobcast from Hoback Books, as we combined trad values and an indie spirit.
Hello!
And welcome to The Hobcast. And guess what?
What?
We're outdoors.
We are.
We're in the sunshine. It is absolutely wonderful. We are. Well, just have a listen. Apart from the thunder of traffic.
The peeping of the horn then.
You might just be able to make out the sound of a fantastic roundabout behind us. A Victorian roundabout. We are at the end, one end at least, the landward end of Southport Pier.
We and are. It's beautiful. A beautiful day.
It is. It is. An incredible experience, really, because we've not been anywhere near the coast for months and months and months.
And I haven't been allowed to paddle yet, so I'm sort of on the edge of excitement here.
You are. And the other thing is that we haven't been out in crowds like this. It is the town is rammed full of people, holidaymakers. It is a traditional British seaside scene, albeit the sea is about 3 miles out.
Yeah, we can actually see the sea. That's a weird irony. We're sat by the edge of the pier with all the amusements, the smell of fish and chips. So you know you're at the seaside, but you can't see the sea.
No, you can't. But it is wonderful to be here. Anyway, this is The Hobcast. And what is The Hobcast? It is the podcast of Hoback Books, UK independent publishers of the following genres. Are you going to do it in a Merseyside accent?
I'll try.
All right. Right, you start.
Thrillers.
Crime.
Suspense.
Mysteries. That was terrible. Anyway, but there is a reason for us being here, because a little later we are talking to Malcolm Hollingdrake, and he'll be out on location as well with us in the centre of Liverpool by one of the great landmarks of the city. And the reason is, we're launching the Merseyside Crime Series this week. Catch as Catch Can is published on the 20th of April.
Tomorrow, as this goes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, if you want to be even more specific.
Sorry.
And a little bit later in May, it's May the 18th.
May the 18th it is.
We're publishing Syn, S-Y-N, Syn.
And in fact, we are actually in a very crucial location. We don't want to give too much away, but we're in a very crucial location for Syn.
Well, we don't want to give, we've already given away the location, but we don't want to give too much of why it's important.
Within the town of Southport, yeah, so.
Yeah, well, it's fair to say that we're exactly where we're sitting. In front of us is a bizarre statue of a one-legged diver.
It's just beauty. I really like it. I've just taken about 10 photos of
the one-legged. We'll put that on the website.
One-legged diver.
That might well feature as our cover image for this week's show. But the one-legged diver does feature very heavily in the book, and indeed the roundabout, the Victorian roundabout with all the kids on board, features very heavily as well in the book Syn. So that's why we've come here. We'll be checking out some of the other locations for the other book, Catch as Catch Can, a little bit later. That's spread across this whole area, really. Southport, sweeping down the Sefton coast through Formby, Crosby, and then back into to Liverpool itself, and across the water of the Merseys, of course. Someone letting off firecrackers.
I'm really scared.
Well, that was some drama.
It was. I do apologise.
So, just to explain, we cut off very abruptly there because you may have heard, we don't know what it was, whether it was kids throwing firecrackers or a motorbike backfiring, something like that. Rebecca has a phobia.
I do.
Of loud bangs.
Anything like balloons or fireworks or caps or anything like that. Gunshot, ironically enough. And I just legged it round the corner.
Yeah, you did. Well, look, we've moved a bit more than round the corner, about another, I guess it's about 15, 20 miles down the coast, back towards Liverpool. And we're looking out across the beaches of Crosby.
And it is stunning, it really is.
It's a beautiful day. There's barely a cloud, and it's a beautiful spring day, and there are big crowds out here, but it's a lot quieter.
Oh, it's lovely. It's having the right effect on me. It's calming me down after that excitement in the crowds of Southport.
Southport, yeah, it was a riot of noise and crowds, and we're just not used to it. I must admit, we both have suffered from anxiety to some extent, and yeah, it played all the tricks with us. But we're looking out across another place by Anthony Gormley, the fabulous statues that stare out to sea, and sometimes they're swallowed by the sea itself when it's a high tide. I've been here when it's been really whipping up and the waves are cracking over the heads and drowning these figures. You can see one or two of them barely above the water at the moment, a bit further out there. But it is a very key location for Catch as Catch Can from Malcolm Hollingdrake, who we'll be speaking to very, very shortly. It really is a stunning place, and it's a really great place for contemplation, I think.
It is, and this is my first time here, and I must admit, I've always wanted to see the Gormley statues, and there's almost something of the sublime, because you've got this massive landscape anyway, which has that effect on you, but seeing these solitary figures, and just knowing that they're there, whatever the weather, all the time, nothing, you know, they don't get affected by it, they just stay solidly still. It's really quite affecting.
Yeah, and when you get closer to them, they're covered in barnacles, and you know, they've weathered a fair bit. These iron figures, I guess they're iron, or are they bronze? But they are spectacular, and they feature, of course, on the cover of Catch as Catch Can, which you can see if you go to our website by the brilliant Jem Butcher. Okay, well, let's get on with some news. We need to remember our discipline.
Yes. Keep up the routine.
Do you mind if I start?
Yeah, you go first.
Well, no surprise. We talked about it for the last few programmes, really. The London Book Fair has decided that it will not be held in person, and it will be held online, which rather reduces it to the whole thing to, so what? Why would you go? I guess we'll log in, but we've been to these online conferences before, and they have some value, but they're not even a smidgen as effective as going to an event of that scale in person.
No, it really isn't. Stop. The same. I mean, you know, poor Bugsy.
yes.
You know, they try and make it out that it's going to be as good. It just isn't. So we were both quite disappointed when we heard that news, and the first time we went there, we weren't even Hoback, were we, really? We were just hopefuls, and so it was really quite excited to think we would be going this year, but yeah, it's not to be.
No, it's not. Maybe 2022. And for the big exhibitors who've spent a fortune building their stands, getting them ready for a second year running, they're not going to get to use them.
No.
And the organisers are saying, well, you get discounts and we'll waive some of the fees and all this sort of thing. But I think that'll be a big blow. I mean, these things cost tens of thousands of pounds to commission. We were just going to go in our best bib and tucker, weren't we?
And maybe get some badges.
And get some badges and a couple of coffee mugs to hand out. And maybe some tote bags, which seems to be the currency at these events. But that's gone now. So that was due to be held at the end of June. And won't now be happening. And for us as Hoback Books, it wasn't just, you know, a day out or anything like that. We were actually looking to strike up business contacts with people who might be able to represent the books worldwide, international rights sales, that sort of thing. Possibly one or two people who could act as agents for us in the TV marketplace. So, yeah, I mean, it's a setback. There's no doubt about it. We were going in hope rather than expectation, but
now we're not going at all.
Now we're not going at all. So we'll save a few bob on accommodation and extremely expensive lattes.
An orange juice that takes an hour to get.
Exactly. Well, we'll have to wait again until we feel part of the industry. Bugsy's really enjoying that puddle down there, I have to say. Bugsy is a corgi.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
really bushy
tails.
Yeah, yeah. Bugsy is really enjoying the open, sweeping flats of sand and estuary mud that stretch out across Crosby Beach. It really is beautiful.
Oh, it is beautiful, and I can't wait to get down on the sand, I have to say.
No.
When I'm allowed.
No, indeed. And then you've got these gigantic ships coming in as well. I'm not sure if that's a liner. I think it might be, you know.
Wow.
Coming in. Well, it must be good 700-800 foot long. It's a huge ship, and we've saw a tug going down into the Mersey as well. So Liverpool as a port, I think, has really taken off again. We'll see more of it when we go and visit Malcolm, because we're going down to the Tobacco Warehouse, which was at one stage the biggest brick built building in the whole of Europe. It's a great landmark. It's being revamped at the moment after being derelict for many, many years. And we'll be going down towards the new Liverpool docks area, which has been rebuilt recently. Anyway, enough of the geography. What else have you got in the news?
So the other thing is the Crime Writers Association published their long list this week. So that was quite exciting. Not for us, unfortunately, but, you know, we have high hopes for perhaps next time. But someone who we've just sort of recently started talking to, Judy Dakin, she was nominated. She's been nominated on the long list for the John Creasy Award. So that was really good news for her. So we're very happy for Judy.
Yeah, Judy's going to be narrating Sleeping Dogs from Wendy Turbin for us. Yeah, she's doing extremely well. Just to explain, yeah, this is the Golden Daggers, isn't it? So there's a number of awards.
Yeah, so
we put a couple of our books in.
There's a Gold Dagger, which tends to be someone who's sort of well-established, published yeah. quite a lot of books. There's the Ian Fleming Dagger, which is, I mean, I'm sure you can imagine.
The thrillers.
The John Creasy one, which is, I think it's sort
the
of...
Debut novelist?
New Blood, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's a New Blood one as well.
Right.
Yeah, so
and
debut novel.
Then there's the Diamond Dagger for somebody's contribution to the industry.
Yeah, so usually some legend gets
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
And there's also a Publisher Award, which one day we would like to be on the list,
to be considered?
But not yet. We're too new, really, at the moment. And then the short story as well, which, you know, I quite like. They cover quite a broad spectrum of where you can write crime. It's not just novels. And there's a historical one as well. So,
well, you know, we've got high hopes of getting somebody in those categories next time. And
we're going to try anyway.
Well, we are. And let's not forget that Red Herrings magazine, the last edition,
yes.
in the newcomers, had three authors out of, what, eight
yeah.
were Hobeck authors. So we're coming to get you. CWA
and
Awards.
We know for sure as well that Catchers Catch Can and Sin are going to feature in the next Red Herrings magazine. So
yeah, yeah, no.
It,
so
it does feel a bit like Hobeck takes over the crime world.
You cannot ignore us anymore if you don't make us Hobeck. You know, we've got quite a few people who can come around and sort you out.
Yeah, the Hobeck cat.
Right. So this giant ship, I think it's a container ship, and the tug is waiting to latch onto it. So they're just meeting in the middle of the mouth of the estuary of the Mersey.
I could quite happily leave you here, I think, all day, and you'd sit and you'd ship watch.
Oh, I definitely ship watch. Watch how I say that.
I'll pick you up later.
Yeah, I can't help when I look at these figures. I mean, they are magnificent, but it has echoes, I think, of the journeys that have been taken from this location, from Liverpool, particularly during the war.
Mm.
If you think of the sort of the Atlantic convoys, and you can imagine these figures as being people here waiting for people to come back on those Atlantic convoys, going over to the States, picking up troops or munitions, and hoping they came back.
Actually, that is exactly what it feels like. It feels like they're waiting for something.
Yeah.
And it's almost like they have hope. Even though they know what they're waiting for might never arrive, they still have hope, and that keeps them here.
We've got this, there's a young lad here, can only be, what, 8, 9 years old, maybe 10. He is doing sort of what we describe as parkour, which I was trying to explain to you the other day.
You were, yeah.
Yeah, he's amazing. He's leaping over banisters and rocks and over the bars of the pathway here, as if they don't exist.
I know, I've been watching him as well, doing somersaults and all sorts.
He's loving it. I think
Did you remember when you had that pleasure though as a child, to sort of swinging on the bars?
I've always been a bit hefty, and no. I was rubbish at that
Hanging
stuff.
Hanging upside down on the
railings.
I could
see you doing it. No, I was hopeless. Absolutely hopeless. But it's been a really pleasant couple of... we've been here one night already on Merseyside, and we're going to spend another night here. It's nice to get away from... although we love Hobeck Towers, and we love the Hobeck cat, who you won't hear this week.
No, that's true. She won't feature.
No, she won't. It's been lovely just to get away and get a sense of space and the scene. You're going to paddle in a minute.
Which, I am.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you can't see me paddling on the Hobcast.
No, you can't. But that's going to be very exciting. Should we get to the interview?
I think we should now. We've been talking for quite a while.
Or shall we mention we've got some Hobeck news?
We do have some Hobeck news, and I think it's very important that we mention it before we go to the interview.
Okay. Right. Well, we signed another author. We have been busy, haven't we? Number 13.
Lucky for some and lucky for us. Sue Shepherd has joined us, and we're really pleased she has.
Yeah. We'll be publishing Swindled, her first crime novel.
She's
an experienced novelist, but this is her first crime novel. And it's got one of the best villains that we've yet come across.
Oh, we love the villain.
Vincent.
Yes.
He's quite something.
He's alive, isn't he, in our heads?
Yeah, he is, very much so. So we're looking forward to talking about that. That'll come some point in the future.
Yeah, so we'll have Sue on the podcast at some point.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of the work we've been doing this week, a lot of proofreading.
We have.
We've had some submissions in, which have been really, really good. And again, you know, the temptation is to just pick the phone up and say, yes, come and join us. But we have to be a bit more cautious.
It's really difficult, isn't it? Because every now and then there's one that just shines out. And it's very hard to get the balance between what we can physically do between the two of us and wanting to just spread the joy of someone's writing.
Absolutely. So we have to be a bit, we have to be businesslike about
it.
And then we've got another competition coming up soon.
We do. So we've got all the... Oh, there's a little doggy. Hello. We've got all the bits and pieces for the competition. So we should be able to launch it next week, I think, actually.
Great. Well, we'll talk about that next week.
And it's related to where we are.
It is related to where we are. It very much is. Well, let's get to the interview then. And we caught up with Malcolm Hollingdrake. Now, he's published the Harrogate crime series, reached 10 books so far. And just the other day, he released the first three as a discounted box set. And guess what? It went to number two. Or was it even number one? I can't remember.
I've got a feeling he went to number one.
He went to number one. Well, on the back of that, we're delighted to say that we are launching the Merseyside crime series, which features two new detectives that you will love, absolutely love. DCI April Decent and Detective Sergeant
Skeeter Warlock.
Skeeter Warlock, great names. Decent and Warlock, you can see it on ITV.
Decent.
Some point in the future. You're raping my son now.
I am, I'm sorry.
My eldest son, Ben, uses the word decent for everything, even when it's not decent.
So, how's your week been, Ben?
Decent. To be fair. If he wants to add a few more words.
Just for emphasis.
Right, well, let's get back on track here. So we are delighted to release the Merseyside crime series featuring Decent and Warlock. And two books will be coming out close together. The first on Tuesday, the 20th of April, which is the day after we published this podcast. And then on May the 18th, we've got Sin coming out as well. But let's get to Malcolm and speak to a brilliant author, Malcolm Hollingdrake. Malcolm Hollingdrake.
Good morning.
Good morning, and welcome to, well, it's not the most picturesque part of Liverpool, but it's certainly atmospheric.
It certainly is. Mind your minds, there are a rather nice view from this side. I'm looking at the tobacco warehouse, which is lovely.
Yeah, you've got the tobacco warehouse, which is, well, you tell us. You've got the facts and figures to your fingertips.
The tobacco warehouse is the largest brick-built warehouse in the world, and when it was built in 1901, was the largest structure in the world. It comprises 37 acres of flooring. It's been derelict for a very long time, but now it's been converted into apartments. Quite strange, really, because the position of this faces over the docks. So you have the rough with the smooth, in a way. And it will be interesting to see how many people actually bite the bullet and buy. I'm sure in the future, this area is going to be absolutely outstanding. But I don't think I'll live to see that far into the future.
Oh, you never know.
No,
we're on book 20. We'll come back.
Book 20. Yeah, you never know. Skeeter Warlock might be living in one of the apartments. You just don't know by then, do you?
Absolutely. So, to explain to our listeners what we're talking about, it's the Merseyside crime series, which, as we speak, is just a day or so from publication, which is extremely exciting. Malcolm has written two books which are ready to go. And so the second one is Sin, that comes out on May the 18th. But on April the 20th, Catch as Catch Can comes out. And this is a very significant setting in the Merseyside crime series, the tobacco warehouse.
It is. It is. I used the tobacco warehouse, and mainly Liverpool, for the first book. And the hotel, which is called, strangely enough, the Titanic, is situated next to the tobacco warehouse. And there's a lovely bridge that goes across the Stanley Dock, and I wanted to feature that. And it's where one of the detectives believes a knife used in one of the crimes is thrown into the soup as he knows it, which is, and that's a gentleman swimming in the soup right now as we look out.
And he looks very cold.
He looks very cold indeed, and I don't know what he's swimming through, but I'm sure he's doing very well. But realistically, it's just a fantastic setting, and we also featured Love Lane. And I drove down Love Lane today, where we came to meet Adrian and Rebecca. And it's more grim than I remember it to be when I first saw it. But it's a great place. Great place for setting, great place for setting crimes. And strangely enough, if you go right, if you're back to the tobacco dock and go right, you find yourself at the mouth of the Mersey at Crosby. And then further on, the wonderful Sefton coast unfolds. So you get then to Freshfields, Ainsdale, and then on to Southport. But go left from here and follow the river by 10 minutes, and you'll come to a UNESCO World Heritage Site, which is the Three Graces and the centre of Liverpool. And that always fascinates me, that you can be within 10 minutes of this in prime locations, but you can also be right in the grim side. And I think as these apartments start to be developed, you will eventually see people living the rough and the smooth, the new and the old together. And that fascinates me, that link where you have modern buildings, modern apartments, modern homes juxtaposed with industry that survives because of the docks. And because of that, you're going to get an influx of people bringing hope and wealth to the centre of the old part of the city. But also with that prosperity will come other areas, and it's that fascinates me, that comes with it, that fascinates me to write about Merseyside in the crime series.
Well, that was actually going to be my next question, because some of our listeners will know you through the Harrogate crime series, which has been very successful, and you've just finished book 10, haven't you?
I have.
Or published book 10. Yeah. So what inspired you to shift to Merseyside?
Well, I love Merseyside. I love the docks. I love the Sefton coast particularly. And I like the shabby chic of Southport. And it has suffered with the lockdown, Southport, tremendously, particularly the shopping area. But it has a fascination. And as I went there as a child when I lived in Bradford. We used to go for day trips to Southport. And living so close now, going to Ainsdale, walking Ainsdale Beach, it has a fascination. Again, it's because it's so close to Liverpool. You just have this wealth of countryside, wealth of scenery that you wouldn't get anywhere else. But I think Southport is very much like Harrogate in a way. It's a Victorian town, and the architecture and the ambience of it is not too dissimilar.
I think what fascinated me about Southport yesterday, because I've never been before, was it felt like a seaside town. You had all the elements of a seaside town. You had the candy floss, the fish and chips, like you say, sort of Victorian architecture as well as some Art Deco architecture. But you couldn't really see the sea.
You never see the sea at Southport.
So it was almost like, well,
It doesn't come in. It doesn't come in. Actually, it does.
That was the only element missing. It was a seaside town without the sea.
Without the sea.
Which I thought was quite interesting.
And the pier, if you go to the end of the pier, you might just see it. But it has the big marine lake in front. But I can remember as a kid, they used to fly aircraft from the beach. And in fact, this coast is renowned for being the starting point for aviation within the UK. Blackpool Airport was one of the first, and all the competitions to fly, offering huge prizes, were all down this coast. And they built, hand-built. The first ever metal aircraft was built in near Wigan, strangely enough. So that's a reason it fascinates me. And I sailed from here on a gaffrig schooner, 72-foot gaffrig schooner, one October. We were heading out to Ireland, didn't get there. The closest we got was Anglesey, and we pulled into Holyhead in a major storm. I've never seen as many people fighting for a bucket in my life.
No.
I was so cold, and my sailing instructor was in a bunk which looked very much like a coffin, fast asleep, and I was shaking so much I couldn't get I had to get these clothes off. I thought, otherwise I will die. I managed it. So I have a lot. You know, although I'm a Yorkshireman, I do love Liverpool. I do love it.
Yeah, and that's hard because it's Lancashire. essentially.
Missionary work.
Yeah, okay. No, it is a spectacular space where we are at the moment. So we've got these, it's really quite weird. I'm sure that water has been cleaned up a little bit because they've got water polo courts out in the dock, as you can see with the goals framed by red and white. And this is similar to what, this is owned by Peel Holdings, and they did a similar thing to the other end of the ship canal from here. The Manchester Ship Canal is stretches to, 50 miles away from here now. And they cleaned up some of the docks by aerating them. And they take a lot of pride in making sure that you can do water sports without dying from whatever pollution and diseases you might get in there. So that's what it looks like they've done here. But then you've got open sort of warehousing for timber. There's a big timber yard ahead of us. And then you can see the gigantic wind turbines, which then approach the new docks of Liverpool.
New so Stanley too, yeah.
Yeah, which is, so they can take Panamax vessels there, I believe, which are the gigantic container, like the one that got stuck in the Suez Canal. They could pull up here and divest their contents and the containers. So that's the vision of Liverpool as a port in the future. But I still find it very hard when I look at the Mersey, broad and swirling and dark as it is, I can't imagine liners coming up and down it. I know that the three Cunarders came down here not so long ago, but it still strikes me as extraordinary.
Well, I found we had the Britannia, and Dev and myself went down to actually look at it, and the Mersey dwarfs it, to be honest. And when you see the boats coming out and pirouetting in the middle of the Mersey, it's a magnificent sight to behold. And of course, you've got the contrast because you've got the Wirral just over the other side, and the dark side, as it's known.
Not the posh side.
Well, my aunt and uncle in the 60s lived in Upton on the Wirral, and my uncle used to work in Liverpool. He was an estate agent value for the railways, and he used to bring me across on the ferry. And as a very small child, I could never understand. Some days we would walk up the jetty from the ferry, and other days we would walk down the jetty from the ferry to the same point. And it didn't dawn on me for quite some time that it was the tide. Yeah. I must have been a very thick child. But it was fascinating. But it is a beautiful view. But if you look at the tower, which is just at the end of this dock,
yes,
it's right twice a day, that clock.
How strange. And I'm a very thick adult.
It's that classic line from Withnail and I, even a stop clock tells the time,
yes,
twice a day. Yeah.
I see they've also got floodlights on these water polo courts.
So not can you imagine in the middle of winter? Yeah, gathering here at 7 in the evening for a quick dip and a game of water polo. Imagine you would work up a sweat doing that, I'm sure, even in that water.
It's fascinating, absolutely. And this must be the best of the three courts because it has canvas around to stop the ball going underneath the jetties.
Yeah, that's the pick.
That's the final one, isn't it?
Court number one.
Always choose court number one.
It really is a magnificent setting. So really inspirational for when you're writing.
Very much so.
How often in the build-up to writing Catch as Catch Can and Sin did you come down
quite
to these locations?
Times. Quite a few times. And the nice thing about it is walking it, is leaving the car alone and walking. And a number of years ago when I started to make leaded windows, Pearson's Glass is situated just across from the tobacco dock. And I did a number of courses there. And of course, you during the breaks at I used to come out and walk and enjoy the scenery. So, and it changes with seasons. I mean, winter down here is bleak, and summer can be absolutely glorious. But I still can't get over looking at that dock, the warehouse behind you, how that's changed in the last 5 years. Because again, it was all the windows were open, there was no glass in them. It looked grubby and dark. But now, the tobacco warehouse sign at the very top is vibrant.
It's quite interesting,
stunning.
Isn't it? Because it's just changing the windows, and I mean a little bit about the structure, but it's completely transformed it.
Very much. And I think it blends in beautifully. But again, I think it's a grade 2 star building, that one. So they can't do very much with it other than keep its general appearance. But if you look at the gates of the docks too, they've always fascinated me because they look like the rook from a chess set with the castellated tops. Beautifully, beautifully made. When you think they're only gates, now we just put concrete posts in, but then they made these wonderful structures. We've lost a lot. We've lost an awful lot.
You've captured a lot of it in your book. And all these, now we're here, it all comes to life. I could picture it.
And
I could feel
it,
but now I know you've captured it absolutely spot on.
If I was thinking about this, because I've only ever been to Liverpool, the centre, with my children to go to the Tate or the gallery in the centre of Liverpool and a bit of shopping. I haven't really explored it. And then I read your books and I thought, they did make me want to come back again. And then us two doing this sort of Hoebeck on tour.
You're forgetting the submarine.
Oh, yes, we did.
The U-boat.
We did. We went on the submarine. Not the yellow one, but...
across the water?
Yeah, across the water. Yeah.
It's chopped in two now, isn't it?
Chopped in three, yeah. Three. Yeah, which is a shame.
When it came, it was in one. And you could go into it in one. And it was very, very claustrophobic.
Yeah, it would be.
Fabulous, though, isn't it? I mean, it's a great memento. But I think the other side as well has a lot to offer in as a tourist attraction. But I've never ventured that far with the books. Southport for Sin is the main featured area. Ainsdale, of course, for the first part of the Catch as Catch Can. But no, it just offers a great deal. So coming down here, that's particularly like on a Sunday, it's so quiet. People don't bother you. You can wander about, and it's just rather nice. If you come down here midweek, you wouldn't hear yourself because of the construction work going on at the tobacco.
Well, Malcolm, you do bring us to the most glamorous spots, don't you?
The Rubber Duck Hotel is sitting just opposite us, yes.
On Arctic Road.
On Arctic Road.
Just next to Summer Seat.
Summer Seat is one of the grottiest lanes in Liverpool, I'd argue.
Well, it certainly has a fair amount of litter deposited on that, doesn't it? But this is the docks, isn't it? And this is the dark side. This is the shady part of it all. But there's nobody here, which is also very pleasant.
Yeah, apart from the odd seagull.
Well, even Father Tread says back in 15 minutes, so we can't get our tyres done either.
Or possibly 30.
Oh, well, at least there's a supply of bricks in case they take the tyres. Those old jokes. Now, let's pick it up in terms of your craft, because we've already mentioned it's not your first rodeo, but you've got a whole series of 10 novels so far with the Harrogate series. But how difficult was it to imagine and scope and sketch out plans for a new one?
Really quite difficult. First of all, I didn't know whether I'd be able to do it because you get set with certain characters. But the idea of creating new characters inspired in a way. I was asked at one time, I was commissioned to write a new series, and I had the idea for the two lady detectives, Skeeter and April. Originally I thought of bringing April Richmond from the Harrogate series to Merseyside, but then thought better of it. But I had Skeeter in my mind for quite some time, and because Wigan is well known for its wrestling and Catch as Catch Can wrestling at the Snake Pit, I wanted her to be a candidate. So I went and did the research with a gentleman called Royce Banks, who has a gym at Ince in Wigan and a very keen wrestler himself. And I spent a couple of hours with him talking about it. So it seemed to fit perfectly. And once I got into the writing of the Harrogate, the difficulty is not confusing one series with another, because Catch as Catch Can is, I've written three books since Catch as Catch Can. So you do forget where you are. And I'm writing book 11 of the Harrogate at the present time. And I have to really think carefully about who's what, who are the police, who are the team, to make sure I don't duplicate from one to the other. But I've loved it. I've loved every minute. And I hope it comes through that I do love Liverpool. So to be able to ride along the Sefton Coast is just ideal for me.
I mean, it certainly does come through that you love Liverpool. You know, like we said a little bit earlier, you know, we definitely felt it coming here after reading the books. But how do you come up with the characters? Because you're going to be living with them for quite a long time of your life.
Well, writing in a female voice was quite interesting. And I sort of learned a bit of that craft with the Harrogate series. But to have Skeeter, mischievous and tomboyish, was really, really pleasant. And part of the joy of writing for me is the development of the characters and to see them live, and they become part of me. Cyril Bennett is part of me. David Owen, I just love writing him. He's a little bit like Skeeter in a way, isn't he? But it's that challenge, and it's keeping the challenge alive and interesting and vibrant that keeps my writing, I hope, the same. And because I've never really read crime thrillers, in fact, I've not read crime thrillers at all, the style has got to be mine because it's never been picked by anybody else. I've never been influenced by any other crime writer. So, yeah, it was an experiment, and it was one I hoped I would find a publisher. I couldn't send out the Harrogate series to a publisher because I had so many books. I couldn't send out the first book I wrote, which was Bridging the Gulf. So I thought, well, if I'm writing a new series, it gives me the opportunity to put it to one side and see if a publisher would like it. And I'd watched Hoback for that year, in a way, and when I saw a number of authors I knew, Alison and Linda, I thought, well, let's just give it a go. And fortunately, you liked what I did.
We're so glad you did, yeah.
Here we are. And yes. Look, I'm fascinated that you don't read crime fiction.
Never read crime fiction. In fact, I don't read fiction at all.
So why crime?
Well, that's a very good question. I wrote a thriller, a terrorist thriller first, Bridging the Gulf. And then I just thought, well, crime is around. And I thought of one about education and school because I'd done 32 years of teaching and I'm sure I could write something. But that I was bored with education. I was bored with teaching. But crime seemed to be calling. So and being an upright standing citizen, I thought, well, I'd like to turn it round the other way. That's Jonathan Livingston Seagull up there. I just thought I'd give it a go. And I loved it. And people seemed to like what I did and like the style of my writing. And if somebody had said to me 4 years ago, you'd finish 10 books, I would never believe them. Really never believe them. Because I don't plan. I sit down with one idea and then I just write it. I research it, but I don't plan it. And sometimes I can be 2/3 of the way through the book and I still don't know what the ending's going to be. And suddenly it comes. Suddenly it comes. And that's a great relief because it is quite, I get quite anxious at sometimes that I really don't know where it's going, this story. But then, and the good thing about that, of course, is if I didn't know where it was going, nobody else who's reading is going to know where it's going. But it does come right in the end. And then going back and editing and revising and reviewing. But my main bête noire are character names, finding names of subsidiary characters. And I will give Debbie the manuscript and say, you do realise you've got 3 Stuarts in this book. You've got so many with same sounding surnames. And that's why I used to do quite a few competitions online for people who wanted their names as a character within a book. And they were quite successful. And it was a great pleasure to write somebody's name in there.
I think people really like that, though, don't they? The thought that they are sort of fictionalised and they become this character and it's...
Yeah,
cause
yeah.
I was quite chuffed when my dad was in one of Lewis Hastings' books.
It's nice, though, isn't it? And, yes. And do you know what? The majority of them are ladies. And they'll say, would you like to be good or bad? And the majority, 90%, say, I'd love to be really bad, please.
Of course.
And I just think, well, why do you want to be bad? And one lady who lives in Tasmania, strangely enough, who won, she wanted to be as evil as possible because her daughter doesn't believe she did anything bad in her entire life. So when I wrote her in, she was absolutely thrilled. She became an assassin. She didn't last very long. She only lasted 2 chapters. But another lady, April Richmond, I only had a good character to write. And she's been in all 3 now, for the last 3. So being good does pay off in the end, you see.
You tend to live if you're good, don't you, I think?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's interesting because we were talking to Adam Croft about this. Why does he write crime fiction? And he says that he likes to go to the dark side and he likes the feeling that there's a resolution, a positive resolution at the end of it.
Mm. Mm.
And that gives him a reassurance almost that you can deliver a happy outcome.
I think it's in us all. I think the dark side is in us all. And you only have to. I received a personal message from a reader I'd never met, and she said that she read the first of the Harrogate series and she was surprised about one of the characters and how, from being such a perfect citizen, one incident changed him, the light switch moment, and his whole personality and character changed. And she said, we could be walking past people in the street who are those characters. And that's quite a fascinating way to think when you're writing, that the man who sits next to you in the cafe could have just killed somebody 4 minutes ago down the road.
Or the man I'm sat next to now.
Could go. And as Debbie always said, people say to Debbie, how do you live with him? With his ideas. She said, well, I have to sleep with him as well, which makes it even worse.
There's no escape.
You actually have got two psychos either side of you.
Oh, my God, and a psycho sandwich.
Sitting near the Rubber Duck Hotel.
You could do away with me, throw me over the railings, and no one would know.
The Mersey, into the Mersey soup.
You'd be washed down to the Eastgate locks. Yeah.
You'd never be seen.
That's so reassuring, thank you.
No, we came away this weekend. Main reason was to come and see you and celebrate the series. But it's funny, you know, we wanted to change the perspective. We have our bucolic view. You've seen it now. Mm. Hoebeck Towers, looking
beautiful.
Out of remote,
beautiful
and open fields, and it is lovely. But actually, there is something life affirming about coming to somewhere
the darker side.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to be here at night. That's for sure.
No. You wouldn't want to loiter around here at night, I don't think. But then again, sometimes the darker places can be the most secure, because most people don't want to come down here.
The irony of it, yeah.
But if you want to go into the centre of Liverpool, I would find it more worrying being in this Liverpool at 2 o'clock in the morning than being down here at 2 o'clock in the morning. I think it's... I find this place just fascinating.
It is, and, you know, we noticed we were staying in the centre of Liverpool, window open, the noise. It was incessant. I mean, it was... It's the closest to New York I've come to in this country, I think, in terms of that buzz.
It's an alive city, and of course, it's people love it because of they have an affiliation with the Beatles and with the popular music of the 60s, and people come to, again, look at that. And that's a large wagon just moving away. But, I think there is an attraction. People do love being in the city, and Scousers, if we can call them Scousers, and I have no reason that they would be upset by that, love their city too. And you can tell that by the football teams and the red nose and blue nose. And there's a real strength in the city, and keeps it going, keeps it alive, keeps it vibrant.
Yeah, I mean, it's unique, isn't it? I mean, there is no other city like Liverpool. It has its own culture, its own feel, its own, like you say, you know, so much about it. It's a very cultural city.
It's a melting pot of people, and ports tend to be. And this one always has been. And the number of people that have moved through this port over the time, well, it just helps make that cocktail of life and living something more special, I think.
Well, I came out in hives coming. We took a wrong turning and ended up at Anfield. Manchester United fan, it was just like... I thought I was going to get stoned or something like that, you know, because they smashed up the Real Madrid coach just the other day. So, and that was without a crowd at the stadium. I was terrified. Anyway, we've survived so far. We've survived so far.
You're not wearing the shirt, I noticed.
No, that's for sure. Never wear colours. That's an important lesson. You can barely wear them in Manchester nowadays. The shame of the way the club's been playing until recently. So, no, it's in terms of the series, we've got two books.
Yes.
Ready to roll,
indeed.
Where do you see the series going?
Well, I see I have the idea for book three. That's in my head, which is quite unusual. And I thought, well, I could start that now, but I wanted to wait and see just how people responded to book one. And the nice thing is having book two follow closely at its heels. And I think people enjoy getting books quite quickly. And I certainly know that because I didn't write book 10 because I had the two Merseyside series to write, and people did respond to me and say, look, what's happening with book 10, please? I'm waiting for it. And so I thought, well, I will write that. And now I started book 11. And once I get a feel of how people are taking to the Merseyside, I'll start book 3.
And in terms of the dynamic between the two key characters?
They're going to change round a little bit, because I think Skeeter is the stronger of the two characters. And I like writing Skeeter's part, and I want to develop that. And also there are certain relationships developing outside the team that I also want to develop more quickly than I did with the Harrogate series. Although one of the positive comments that people have come back to me about the Harrogate was that Cyril stood back up a little bit in some of the stories, and they preferred Cyril to be more involved. But I think in real life, you know, if life incidents like getting married, you do pull away and you do leave the job to your teammates. And I wanted it to be as real as I could make it. So I don't suppose I offer an apology for that, but it has made me think that in book 11, Cyril is going to take the lead, because it is quite a serious crime in book 11.
Ooh, that's a taster for everybody. But so do you think your characters actually tell the story more than you do, in a way that, you
yes.
know, you don't know what's going to happen in, say, there's a book 7 or book 8 of this series? Are they going to direct it for you rather than...
Yes.
Yeah.
I think they have a strong influence in the way that you write. And you get that feedback, again, from your readers. The people they like, the characters they like, the certain traits those characters have. You get that feedback and you can build on that. But you also have a clear idea in your own head of where they're going to go. And that's important, because it's your story and it's people want your story. But I do like the development, and I couldn't write now standalone books, although I hope every one of mine could work as a standalone. I do like to, for readers to see how these people develop in real life, as we all do.
Well, they get very invested in the characters, don't they? And they actually feel like they know them.
They do, and I think a lot of, when you do podcasts and interviews, people say, well, who is Cyril Bennett? Well, he's got to be part of me, to be perfectly honest. There's a lot of Cyril in me. I hope there's not a lot of David Owen in me, because I don't dribble my tea as much. But, and that's been the difficult thing with writing about Skeeter. But I know certain people, and I can take from those characters, real characters, and invest those in the characters within the book.
I want to just touch on the benefits of what you did as a job, because 32 years in education, and latterly a deputy head. You must have come across all of these characters. The whole breadth of society comes through those doors.
Oh, indeed. Indeed.
And, you know, you can... And I suppose you get a teacher's nose as well as a copper's nose. You can spot immediately when the year 7 pupils come in which one's going to be the one that's going to occupy 90% of your time.
Yeah, there's a difficulty with that. And again, you haven't to label. And it's very easy to label characters, and because they're as nervous as anybody else when they're coming into a new situation, and you have to let them settle. And I've worked with some extremely bullying teachers, and I've worked with extremely kind, and I know the ones who get the better results are the kinder ones, the ones that are tolerant and supportive and will bring them along. But in my final years, I was seconded to take a school through an Ofsted inspection and a move of site, and it was an EBD school, Emotional Behaviour Problem Kids. Never been in one before, never set foot in one, and took on the headship role for that. And again, I was amazed when I knew their home background circumstances, or the lack of home circumstances, how normal these kids were. And if I had to face some of the problems they faced at their age, I defy anybody to be quite normal. And it was really quite humbling working with and helping to develop those children. In fact, I was doing a book signing in Waterstones in Wigan, and two people came to me and said, "You taught my daughter at the school, this school." And we managed to get her through her SATs in, and moved her on. And now she's doing social work with children with emotional behaviour problems.
Wow.
And that was just the best reward I could have asked for. And it just came out of the blue. One of the problems, of course, with teaching, you never see a result. If you're a bricklayer, you can see the wall you built in the day. In teaching, it's much more long-term than that. But when you... Providing you don't meet somebody in the dark alley and they give you a thumping for telling them off, most of the time you meet people and they'll recognise you, but you will not recognise them because of the change, obviously. But I've had some wonderful things. In fact, I've had, with becoming a writer, I've had people contact me and said, "You taught me at so-and-so," and one is a professor of dentistry now in Portsmouth. And yet another girl contacted me, who's now obviously a woman. She said, "Did you do your second teaching practice in Richmond, North Yorkshire?" And I said, contacted me, "Yes, I did." She said, "You taught me." And I won a short story writing competition, and I still have the jar the sweets were in, and I still have the story.
Amazing.
Now, I was then, 22? And to get that back last year was just a reward in itself.
Wow. That is amazing. And in a funny way, we see publishing as this sort of thing as well. You know, we may never meet some of the readers that are reaching the books. Well, we meet our authors and our relationship between, you know, there are moments of artistic friction occasionally where we're having a debate about which way a cover's going.
That's what partnerships are.
Right, exactly. No, exactly. You know, you're there to be critical friends to each other. And one of the reasons I went into this business from my old one was the fact that, you know, with broadcasting, you never got any immediate feedback. And it's straight out there. It's not even as substantial as a newspaper, which gets archived. Yes. It just disappears into the ether. And yes, the only times it ever gets dug up again is if you've done something wrong and you're getting sued. So this feels more tangible. In terms of writing and putting yourself out there through your characters in your books, does it replace, or what need does it fulfill in you compared to when you were working?
Well, it keeps the grey cells working, which is when you get to my age is important. And I do think that ability. I've always been quite a creative person. I've always enjoyed art and painting and so on. And this is another form of that. And English was never my strong point. As I said, I was never really a reader. So this has been a real challenge for me, and it's been a challenge I've enjoyed tackling. And to get any sort of success has been very hard work. But I love it, and I can't see myself stopping. Maybe people won't want my work, but I think I will always write something.
Yeah, I mean, we've said this before, but all you need is one person to read it and say, loved it, and that's fulfilling.
Oh, it's getting reviews, getting positive reviews, and sometimes getting negative reviews, because I will read every review I get, is always, and I said the word before, humbling, and it's lovely to see that people have can actually relate to what you've actually tried to convey within the written word. And so if they can enjoy a story and say, oh, I'd like to read the next one, then job done, job well done.
And they are saying that, so
yeah,
that's a good sign.
I've been thrilled with some of the reviews from Catch As Catch Can. It's just lovely. And there'll be a balance. Some will get some people who won't like it, but then, you know, I don't like cauliflower cheese.
I like the cheese bit.
Yeah. But you're not going to please everybody all of the time, but providing any review is constructive and will help me and guide me on my path, then I'm willing to accept it and embrace it. But some of them that can be pure vindictive, and I've seen quite a few, once you get over that initial upset, as you grow older and as you get more books behind you, you'll learn to grow another skin, and sometimes it's best not loitering with that review for long. Try and forget it and move on,
and I think
read a good one.
Sometimes there's context as well, that, you know, when you look at it straight on, it's quite upsetting, but there may be some context that person has a particular issue with something you've written about from their lives, and they don't like
true.
Yeah, so
one thing I learned very quickly early on when I wrote the second book is, don't harm animals or pets. Just do not go anywhere
cats.
Near them. Do not go near them. And of course, I had a little bit of dog fighting, and I thought I'd handled it quite sensitively. But some people stopped reading at that point.
Yeah.
And that's fine. But I think you've got to read through something, or even turn the pages more quickly, and carry on. But everybody's to their own. But I did learn that very valuable. And you know what? I said to this lady who stopped reading, I said, but the dogs had torn somebody up to pieces before. Oh, she said, you can do anything you like to human beings. I can read that all day long. But don't harm an animal.
Yeah. Very wise words. Let's end on a positive note. Before we go and eat cauliflower cheese three ways at an exclusive eatery.
Flambéed.
Yeah, out in the cold. No, it's quite warm this afternoon. Let's think, how would you like the people of Merseyside to regard the Merseyside series? Because, you know, you're writing as an outsider. Okay, you live not that far from here, and you spend a lot of time here. But, you know, nonetheless, in this day and age when authenticity and writing from your own experience is the most important thing, and, you know, some would argue, you know, if it's going to be writing about Merseyside, it's got to be a Scouser writing it. How would you like them to feel about your books?
I'd like them to remember that it is fiction, to begin with. That it's geographically accurate, and that the places I write about are there, and you can visit and see. The places in my pages are real. It pays respect to Liverpool, and it's enjoyable. The whole point of reading a book, in my opinion, although I don't read that many, is to, for enjoyment. And if it takes you away from your everyday pressures in life, then I hope you enjoy them.
I'm sure they will.
Thank you very much.
Malcolm, thank you so much.
Thank you very much for coming all this way up.
We've enjoyed it.
All right, la. Malcolm Hollingdrake taking us to the back streets of the port of Liverpool. And we have moved locations again. We are right in front of the Mersey now, on the Birkenhead side of the water.
Is that the good side or the bad side?
I think it depends on what your perspective is. But it is the famous view over towards the Three Graces, which I think people have tried to explain to you what they are. Can you give us a go?
So the first one is the Liver Building with the Liver Birds, which was a TV show when I was little. The middle one is something else?
Yes, it's the Cunard Building.
And Cunard made chips?
Well, they ran them, yeah. I mean, they still do.
Like P&O?
Similar, but classier, some would argue.
And the last one is a UNESCO building.
No, it is the Port Authority. Altogether, they are a World Heritage Site recognised by UNESCO, as indeed is the Albert Dock, which is right in front of us, the huge red brick building, 5 or 6 stories high, where they used to record This Morning on ITV.
Indeed they did, and most memorable was the bloke who did the weather jumping on this inflatable map of the UK.
Yeah, Fred. Fred the weatherman. We don't talk about him anymore. He got done for, anyway, as a teacher. I'll leave it there. Anyway, it is a beautiful view of Liverpool from the other side of the water, and other great landmarks include the Anglican and the Catholic cathedrals, which are quite distinctive from each other. But we've had a wonderful time here in Liverpool, or De Liverpool, as I now call it.
He does.
And the reason is, when I was standing outside our suite, very posh sounding apartment, in the centre of town, waiting for our own delivery from Deliveroo, there must have been, I don't know, 20 cyclists going past carrying those great big green haversacks. Insulated haversacks carrying food to people's doors. We live out in the sticks, we don't get this opportunity, but this whole economy has changed.
Completely. They look like snails to me with their big, enormous, great big green backs.
They do, but they're... Well, actually, one of them was really unathletic. He was on a racing bicycle, but he had the, twice the paunch I do. Spilling out of his lycra. So,
that's a lovely image. Thank you for that.
It is. I wish I lived in this. I mean, I would do that job. I would. Because I would enjoy the harem scarem charging around trying to meet, schedules.
Well, why don't you offer your services to Staffordshire Deliverboo?
We've hardly got any restaurants anywhere near us within about a 10-mile radius.
There's a chippy.
A chippy. Right, yeah, we're going to get delivery for that. Well, okay. So, Liverpool has given us a great deal. It's given us an opportunity to meet Malcolm and to celebrate the launch of the Merseyside crime series. Catch Us Catch Can comes out just after this podcast. So check it out at our website, www.hobeck.net. And you can order the paperbacks from there. And of course, it's available on Kindle Unlimited and Amazon as well. But it really has been a privilege to be here. What have you taken from your weekend with Liverpool?
I think for me, because I haven't been to Liverpool for 2 or 3 years and I've only really been in the centre, so being able to do this sort of trips to the locations that are relevant to the books, it really brings it to life for me, because I've read both books, of course, and I've really enjoyed it, and I get quite sentimental. I only have to go somewhere for a day and I feel quite sad to leave, so I do feel a little bit sad.
Yeah, I feel that too. And I've always been drawn to those areas where industry has forgotten. And we've been to a lot of those. But Liverpool is one of these cities that never, ever gives up. And it keeps developing and it's very organic and it's got an energy all of its own.
Yeah, it has a sort of an interesting optimism, doesn't it? And a sense of humour and a sense of appreciation of art. And a bit like what you say, a sense of appreciation of its history, but not letting it just degrade, but developing into something new and using what it has to... change.
Watch out also for our new competition, which is tied to the Merseyside crime series. We've just been taking the celebratory advertising photos. I hope they come out all right, down by here by the Mersey. But from myself, Adrian Hobart.
And myself, Rebecca Collins.
We'd like to thank you for listening to the Hobcast and wish you a wonderful creative week. We're off to see the cat, who we now know as
Araki.
You've been listening to the Hobcast from Hoback Books with Adrian Hobart and Rebecca Collins. You can find the show notes at our website, www.hobeck.net. You can also use the exclusive Hobcast discount code for any of the products at our Hoback online store. Just enter the code HOBCAST20 for a 20% discount. Don't forget to subscribe to the Hobcast and feel free to contact us with any feedback. Until next time, remember our motto, Trad Values, Indie Spirit.